name is Rosemary Unkler, bringing you readings from the following publications: The Voice, ABC News, U.S. News and World Report, The Griot, News One, Blavity, and Ebony. Today we will have a special article about Black History Month's origins from an online magazine titled ASALH, A-S-A-L-H. This article is titled "The Origins of Black History Month," written by Darrell Michael Scott, ASALH former national president. The story of Black History Month begins in Chicago during the summer of 1915. An alumnus of the University of Chicago, with many friends in the city, Carter G. Woodson traveled from Washington, D.C. to participate in a national celebration of the 50th anniversary of emancipation, sponsored by the state of Illinois. Thousands of African Americans traveled from across the country to see the exhibits highlighting the progress their people had made since the destruction of slavery. Awarded a doctorate in Harvard 3 years earlier, Woodson joined the other exhibitors with a Black History display. Despite being held at the Coliseum, the site of the 1912 Republican Convention, an overflow crowd of 6,000 to 12,000 waited outside for their turn to view the exhibits. Inspired by the three-week celebration, Woodson decided to form an organization to promote the scientific study of Black life and history before leaving town. On September 9th, Woodson met at the Wabash, W-A-B-A-S-H, Y-M-C-A, with A.L. Jackson and three others, and formed the Association of the Study of Negro Life and History, A-S-N-L-H. He hoped that others would popularize the findings that he and other Black intellectuals would publish in The Journey of Negro History, which he established in 1916. As early as 1920, Woodson urged Black civic organizations to promote the achievements that researchers were uncovering. A graduate member of the Omega Psi Phi, he urged his fraternity brothers to take up the work. In 1924, they responded with the creation of Negro History and Literature Week, which they renamed Negro Achievement Week. Their outreach was significant, but Woodson desired greater impact. He told an audience at Hampton Institute students, "We're going back to that beautiful history. It is going to inspire us to greater achievements." In 1925, he decided that the association had to shoulder the responsibility. Going forward, it would both create and popularize knowledge about the Black past. He sent out a press release announcing Negro History Week in February 1926. Woodson chose February for reasons of tradition and reform. It is commonly said that Woodson selected February to encompass the birthdays of two great Americans who played a prominent role in shaping Black history, namely Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass, whose birthdays are the 12th and 14th, respectively. More importantly, he chose them for reasons of tradition. Since Lincoln's assassination in 1865, the Black community, along with other Republicans, had been celebrating the fallen president's birthday. And since the late 1890s, Black communities across the country had been celebrating Douglass's. Well aware of the pre-existing celebrations, Woodson built Negro History Week around traditional days of commemorating the Black past. He was asking the public to extend their study of Black history, not to create new traditions. In doing so, he increased his chances for success. Yet Woodson was up to something more than building on tradition. Without saying so, he aimed to reform it from the study of two great men to a great race. Though he admired both men, Woodson had never been fond of the celebrations held in their honor. He rallied against the ignorant spellbinders who addressed large, convivial gatherings and displayed their lack of knowledge about the men and their contributions to history. More importantly, Woodson believed that history was made by the people, not simply or primarily by great men. He envisioned the study and celebration of the Negro as a race, not simply as the producers of a great man. And Lincoln, however great, had not freed the slaves. The Union Army, including hundreds of thousands of black soldiers and sailors, had done that. Rather than focusing on two men, the black community, he believed, should focus on the countless black men and women who had contributed to the advancement of human civilization. From the beginning, Woodson was overwhelmed by the response to his call. Negro History Week appeared across the country in schools and before the public. The 1920s was the decade of the New Negro, a name given to the post-War I generation because of its rising racial pride and consciousness. Urbanization and industrialization had brought over 1 million African Americans from the rural South into big cities of the nation. The expanding black middle class became participants in and consumers of black literature and culture. Black history clubs sprang up, teachers demanded materials to instruct their pupils, and progressive whites stepped and endorsed the efforts. Woodson and the association scrambled to meet the demand. They set a theme for the annual celebration and provided study materials, pictures, lessons for teachers, plays for historical performances, and posters of important dates and people. Provisioned with a steady flow of knowledge, high schools in progressive communities formed Negro History Clubs to serve the desire of history buffs to participate in the re-education of black folks and the nation. ASNLH formed branches that stretched from coast to coast. In 1937, at the urging of Mary McLeod Bethune, Woodson established the Negro History Bulletin, which focused on the annual theme. As black populations grew, mayors issued Negro History Week proclamations. And in cities like Syracuse, progressive whites joined Negro History Week with National Brotherhood Week. Like most ideas that resonate with the spirit of the times, Negro History Week proved to be more dynamic than Woodson or the association could control. By the 1930s, Woodson complained about the intellectual charlatans, black and white, propping up everywhere, seeking to take advantage of the public interest in black history. He warned teachers not to invite speakers who had less knowledge than the students themselves. Increasingly, publishing houses that had previously ignored black topics and authors rushed to put books on the market and in the schools. Instant experts appeared everywhere, and non-scholarly works appeared from mushroom presses. In America, nothing popular escapes either commercialization or eventual trivialization, and so Woodson, the constant reformer, had his hands full in celebrations worthy of the people who made the history. Well before his death in 1950, Woodson believed that the weekly celebrations, not the study or celebration of black history, would eventually come to an end. In fact, Woodson never viewed black history as a one-week affair. He pressed for schools to use Negro History Week to demonstrate what students learned all year. In the same vein, he established a Black Studies Extension Program to reach adults throughout the year. It was in this sense that blacks would learn of their past on a daily basis, that he looked forward to the time when an annual celebration would no longer be necessary. Generations before Morgan Freeman and other advocates of all-year commemorations, Woodson believed that black history was far too important Woodson believed that black history was too important to America and the world to be crammed into a limited time frame. He spoke of a shift from Negro History Week to Negro History Year. In the 1940s, efforts began slowly within the black community to expand the study of black history in the schools and black history celebrations before the public. In the South, black teachers often taught Negro history as a supplement to United States history. One early beneficiary of the movement reported that his teacher would hide Woodson's textbooks beneath his desk to avoid drawing the wrath of the principal. During the civil rights movement in the South, the Freedom Schools incorporated black history into the curriculum to advance social change. The Negro History Movement was an intellectual insurgency that was part of every larger effort to transform race relations. The 1960s had a dramatic effect on the study and celebration of black history. Before the decade was over, Negro History Week would be well on its way to becoming Black History Month. The shift to a month-long celebration began even before Dr. Woodson's death. As early as 1940s, blacks in West Virginia, a state where Woodson often spoke, began to celebrate February as Negro History Month. In Chicago, a now-forgotten cultural activist, Frederick H. Hammurabi, H-A-M-M-A-U-R-A-B-I, started celebrating Negro History Month in the mid-1960s. Having taken an African name in the 1930s, Hammurabi used his cultural center, the House of Knowledge, to fuse African consciousness with the study of the black past. By the late 1960s, as young blacks on college campuses became increasingly conscious of links with Africa, Black History Month replaced Negro History Week at a quickening pace. Within the association, younger intellectuals, part of the awakening, prodded Woodson's organization to change with the time. They succeeded. In 1976, 50 years after the first celebration, the association used its influence to institutionalize the shifts from a week to a month and from Negro history to black history. Since the mid-1970s, every American president, Democrat and Republican, has issued proclamations endorsing the association's annual theme. What Carter G. Woodson would say about the continued celebrations is unknown, but he would smile on all honest efforts to make black history a field of serious study and provide the public with thoughtful celebrations. This article was titled The Origins of Black History Month, written by Darrell Michael Scott, ASALA's former national president. Next, an article from The Voice titled Cat's Closet. Students create an in-school resource center to support peers in need. Written by Thomas White, January 10, 2025. In a powerful display of youth leadership and community care, nearly 40 Washington High School students have established an innovative resource center to support fellow students facing economic challenges. The new facility, Cat's Closet, celebrated its grand opening December 2nd with a ribbon-cutting ceremony. Located on the school's first floor, Cat's Closet provides essential items including clothing, shoes, toiletries, personal hygiene products, school supplies, and non-perishable food. The center prioritizes student privacy through a discreet request system using the district's Help Me app or a QR code posted on the door. I think a lot of kids can benefit from it, said student Michaela Clark. It will help a lot of people. I think it can be helpful, and it's an amazing idea that we came up with, said student Thomas Ortiz. The initiative emerged from a leadership class, primarily comprised of freshmen, who transformed an idle room into a community resource. The young leaders were divided into teams, with some focusing on clothing and toiletry collection, while others organized school supply drives and food donations. The project's success stems from Kansas City, Kansas Public Schools' use of Service Learning Projects, SLPs, which teach students to coordinate with community organizations and develop data-driven leadership skills. It was tough because I insisted that all decisions be data-driven, said Linda Weeks, the Washington High teacher who guided the project. Good leaders used data. The project's success stems from Kansas City, Kansas Public Schools' use of Service Learning Projects, SLPs, which teach students to coordinate with community organizations and develop data-driven leadership skills. It was tough because I insisted that all decisions be data-driven, said Linda Weeks, W-E-E-K-S, the Washington High teacher who guided the project. Good leaders use data, and I wanted my students to go through the process and learn how to read pie charts, graphs, and make decisions. I'm proud of myself, said Shaw. I'm proud of pretty much everyone here who was a part of this project. We got a lot of things done. Looking ahead, the students plan to expand services by adding laundry facilities in an adjoining room. The project received crucial support from the Village Initiative Group, which donated clothing and shoes, and Cyrus Fillmore, DIY with Uncle Cy, C-Y, who crafted the custom Cat's Closet sign. Community members interested in supporting Cat's Closet can donate adult-size school-appropriate clothing, school supplies, canned goods, and toiletry items by contacting the school or emailing linda.weeks@kckps.org. Through Cat's Closet, these young leaders demonstrate how student-driven initiatives can create lasting positive change within their school community, ensuring that all students have access to basic necessities with dignity and respect. This article was titled, Cat's Closet. Students create in-school resource center to support peers in need, written by Thomas White, The Voice, January 10, 2025. Next, an article from ABC News titled, Here's How to Help Wildfire Victims as California Blazes Explode in Size, written by Lauren Meltzer, M-E-L-Z-E-R, January 15, 2025. Strong Santa Ana winds are fueling multiple wildfires burning across Southern California, forcing tens of thousands of residents to flee from their homes. Thousands of firefighters are actively battling three brush fires at once in Los Angeles County. The Palisades Fire, said to be the fourth and most destructive fire in California's history, has spread across more than 23,000 acres and is currently at 19% containment, according to the Department of Forestry and Fire Protection. The Eaton Fire, E-A-T-O-N, being billed the second most destructive fire in the state and the most damaging fire on record in Los Angeles, has charred more than 14,000 acres and is currently at 45% containment. The Hearst Fire, impacting nearly 800 acres, remains at 97% containment. Firefighters have fully contained the Woodley Fire, the Sunset Fire, the Lydia Fire, the Kenneth Fire, and the Archer Fire. At least 24 fire-related deaths are being investigated by the Los Angeles County Medical Examiner, with many others sustaining injuries, according to officials. The death toll is expected to rise. More than 12,000 structures were destroyed in the Palisades and Eaton fires, officials said. Los Angeles County Fire Department Chief Anthony Marrone, M-A-R-R-O-N-E, said during a press conference that despite pre-positioning resources from Northern California, the agencies were not prepared for this type of widespread disaster. President Joe Biden signed a disaster declaration for California at the request of Governor Gavin Newsom, N-E-W-S-O-M, who declared a state of emergency on January 7th. Here's how you can help those affected by the wildfires. Wildfire Recovery Fund. The California Community Foundation has worked to help Los Angeles County since 1915. The agency's Wildfire Recovery Fund targets hard-to-reach communities in the area with the intent of providing long-term recovery relief. Red Cross. The American Red Cross has hundreds of volunteers deploying to Los Angeles to assist with emergent needs of those displaced by the fire. The agency currently has 4 shelters in place and plans to add more as needed, according to the Los Angeles Regional Executive Director, Joanne Nowlin, N-O-W-L-I-N. This is significant, Nowlin told ABC News. It's not just the fire, but you've got wind damage, you've got power outages, you've got trees falling, deteriorating air quality. This is impacting thousands and thousands of folks in Los Angeles. The Red Cross provides emergency relief to residents and families impacted by disasters, providing meals, medical care, and a safe place to shower and sleep. California Fire Foundation Wildlife and Disaster Relief Fund. The California Fire Foundation works with community-based organizations and local fire agencies to offer financial support for residents who are impacted by the fires. Los Angeles Fire Department Foundation. The Los Angeles Fire Department Foundation is a nonprofit organization that provides vital equipment for firefighters and funds programs that are critical to help the agency continue to protect communities and save lives. Feeding America. The Los Angeles Regional Food Bank is working with government agencies, nonprofit and faith-based organizations to distribute food and other essentials to those displaced by the wildfires with meals. Salvation Army. The Salvation Army is able to provide assistance by delivering water, food, and emergency supplies. The agency offers both long-term recovery assistance and emergency relief. World Central Kitchen. World Central Kitchen's relief team is able to support those impacted by the wildfires, as well as first responders in Southern California. According to the agency, teams have mobilized to bring in meals to those who are in need of help. Airbnb. Airbnb.org is offering temporary housing for those displaced by the fires in the Los Angeles area. The company is working with 211LA, which offers free housing in Los Angeles County, to coordinate the housing effort. Cal Fire Benevolent Foundation. The Cal Fire Benevolent Foundation provides funding for firefighters and their families to help them recover from injuries and hardship. Global Empowerment Mission. The Global Empowerment Mission works to provide emergency aid supplies to those in need, such as non-perishable food items, hygiene products, and water. They also provide generators, medical supplies, and temporary shelters. Baby to Baby. Baby to Baby is a nonprofit organization that supports children across the county with basic essentials, diapers, and clothing. The organization has said it's already delivered 1 million emergency supplies for families impacted by the fires at shelters and will continue helping in the weeks and months to come. Mercy Chefs. Mercy Chefs is a nonprofit organization that specializes in disaster relief to provide meals to victims, firefighters, first responders, and volunteers. The organization has provided more than 28 million restaurant-quality meals across the country and around the world. This article is titled, Here's How to Help Wildfire Victims as California Blazes Explode in Size, written by Lauren Meltzer, ABC News, January 15th, 2025. Next, another article from The Voice, also by Thomas White, titled, Is It Legal to Drive with Snow on Your Car in Missouri and Kansas? January 10th, 2025. If you were in a rush to get somewhere after our latest Midwest snowstorm, you might have been tempted to skip scraping all the snow or ice off your car. But if you're in Kansas, leaving that snow on could get you a ticket. Kansas law requires drivers to clear snow and ice from their vehicles before hitting the road. Snow on your roof or hood isn't just an eyesore, it's a safety hazard. If it slides off or flies into another car's windshield, you could face fines or liability for any accident it causes. Plus, snow covering your windshield, windows, or license plates could lead to a ticket for unsafe driving. Specifically, Kansas Statute 8-1741 states, no person shall drive any motor vehicle without any sign, poster, or other non-transparent material upon the front windshield, side wings, or side or rear windows of such motor vehicle, which substantially obstructs, obscures, or impairs the driver's clear view of the highway or any intersecting highway. In Missouri, the rules aren't as strict. While no specific law requires you to clear off your car, Missouri Highway Patrol still recommends it. Also, if snow or ice limits your visibility or causes a hazard for other drivers, you could still get pulled over. Even if you're not legally required to clear the snow, it's just good sense. Taking a few extra minutes to clean off your car could prevent an accident, a fine, or worse. So before you start your drive, grab that scraper and get to work. It's a small effort that can make a big difference. This article was titled, Is It Legal to Drive with Snow on Your Car in Missouri and Kansas? Written by Thomas White, The Voice, January 10th, 2025. Next, an article from Health Day titled, Too Much Sitting Harms the Heart, Even in Folks Who Exercise. Written by Ernie Mundell, M-U-N-D-E-L-L, Health Day, November 4th, 2024. There's just something about sitting. New research shows that too much time on sofas and chairs harms the heart, even among people who get the minimum recommended amount of daily exercise. Taking a quick walk after work may not be enough to offset the health dangers of sitting, said study lead author Chandra Reynolds. She's a professor of psychology and neuroscience at the University of Colorado in Boulder. Her team publishes its finding recently in the journal PLOS-1. The data comes from an ongoing study of over 1,000 former or current Coloradans, 730 of who are twins. Reynolds' team focused on participants aged 28 to 49. Study lead author Ryan Bruehlman, Bruehlman, said the cohort was relatively young because young adults tend to think that they are impervious to the impacts of aging. But what you do during this critical time of life matters. Bruehlman is now a PhD candidate at the University of California, Riverside. A lot of participants were sitting a lot of the time, an average of almost 9 hours per day, according to the study. Exercise rates ranged from 80 to 160 minutes of moderate physical activity per week and less than 135 minutes of vigorous exercise weekly. The Boulder team then assessed each person's heart age using two key heart health indicators, total cholesterol / high density lipoprotein and body mass index, BMI. The result: as sitting time increased, heart aging did too. Even when folks met minimum daily exercise recommended, about 20 minutes per day of moderate exercise, the deleterious effect to the heart of all that sitting didn't budge. Adding vigorous exercise, for example, running or cycling for about 30 or more minutes per day, did seem to help counteract the harms from sitting, however. But it still didn't bring those harms back to zero. According to a news release from the university, data from the twins in the study suggests that replacing sitting with exercise seemed to work better to improve cholesterol than simply adding exercise to a full day of sitting. The researchers suggested for folks who sit a lot, try using a standing desk at work. Get in at least 30 minutes of vigorous exercise per day, or add in strenuous workouts on your days off as a weekend warrior. Find out more about the health dangers of sitting at Johns Hopkins University. This article was titled, "Too Much Sitting Harms the Heart, Even in Folks Who Exercise," written by Ernie Mundell, Health Day, November 4th, 2024. The next article is titled, "Howard University Inducts Historic 1974 Men's Soccer Team into its Athletics Hall of Fame," written by Kyra Alessandrini, November 5th, 2024. Howard University inducted its men's soccer team from 1974 into its Athletics Hall of Fame. The HBCU organized celebratory events over the weekend to pay homage to the team's historic victory and undefeated season. "I knew it was something big, but now that I look back on it, I don't think I realized just how big this was for Howard and for black people," Trevor Leiba, L-E-I-B-A, who was goalkeeper for the 1974 team, said in an interview with The Dig, Howard University news publication. "I love meeting people who will say that they're familiar with our team, and it makes me very proud to be part of a team that made history. It's just very special to be the only HBCU team to win a national title." The celebration kicked off on Friday with the official induction ceremony. The weekend concluded with a dinner on Sunday, which was emceed by Rock Newman, an alum. Howard's soccer program was put into the spotlight with the release of the 2016 documentary, Redemption Song, chronicling its history. The team won the 1971 championship and became the first HBCU to win an NCAA national championship. The association then revoked their title due to player eligibility violations. The team came back with another win in 1974. "I look back on that time. I felt then what I feel now. Truth crushed to earth shall rise again." Head coach Lincoln Phillips, who coached the Bison from 1970 to 1980, said, "We knew following the 1971 season that we were the rightful champions, and we fought to reclaim what was rightfully ours. That 1974 season, an undefeated season, was a true testament of claiming our rightful place in history. To win a championship was one thing, but to do it without losing a game is something pretty amazing," Phillips added. "It's an accomplishment that has never been equaled, and for that, I am both humbled and immensely proud." He noted the significance of the win for soccer and the black community. "Back then, soccer was really a minor sport. But now it has grown so much, and so many people, including black people, appreciate the game, Phillips said. What we were doing back in the 1970s was really setting the groundwork for the game to become what it is for our people. This article was titled, Howard University Inducts Historic 1974 Men's Soccer Team into its Athletics Hall of Fame, by Kyra Alessandrini Blavity, November 5th, 2024. The next article is from The Griot, and it's titled, Cheryl Lee Ralph is reaching her biggest career milestones in her 60s. Now she's telling fans, don't give up. Written by Hanaya Philogeny, Hanayah Philogene, January 8, 2025. Cheryl Lee Ralph is a testament to the fact that success has no time limit. At 66 years old, Ralph inspired viewers as she received her first Primetime Emmy Award in her decades-long career. Now, 2 years later, the actress is celebrating another milestone as she prepares to receive a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame on January 29th. I have worked towards this moment, Ralph told People magazine. It is my work that brought me to this time. It was not just given to me. It was work. It's easy to look at the highway and think it's always been like that. But no, there was a time when it was a dirt road and somebody had to bust rocks to clear it. And it wasn't easy, she added. The work included her first film role in 1977's A Piece of Action alongside Sidney Poitier, her Tony-nominated performance in the original Broadway production of Dreamgirls, and appearances on sitcoms like It's a Living and Moesha. With years of experience in the entertainment industry, Ralph has been enjoying a professional resurgence over the last few years, something she has Quinta Brunson, Quinta Brunson, to thank for. In 2021, Brunson tapped Ralph to join her sitcom, Abbott Elementary, which has risen to award-winning success since its premiere. I'm in a show that is literally lightning in a bottle, Ralph explained, later adding, it took a young person to see and value the work and offer me this way forward. That doesn't happen a lot, but it happened to me. Though her journey to success may seem unconventional to most, Ralph's mentors like the late Cicely Tyson and Maya Angelou knew she was destined for greatness. One day I was on a plane, and Cicely Tyson said, many great things are going to happen to you. Many, 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 Ralph recalled per People magazine. The elders have been good to me, and they would not be surprised. Similarly, after working with Poitier, Ralph remembers the iconic director telling her, I'm sorry the industry doesn't have more to offer you, because you deserve it. You better learn how to take care of yourself, because there are not too many people out there that can, Ralph remembered. That's how I started learning the things I needed in an industry that didn't know what to do with me. Carrying the advice and legacies of all of those who came before her, the actress explains how she felt the presence of those angels when she won her Emmy Award. It was a complete shock, she said, reflecting on the moment. I did not think it was going to be me. When they said my name, it was as if every angel in my life flew up and said, come on, come on. This is the moment. This is the time. When I got up there and did what I did, sang what I sang, and said what I said, it was my whole life speaking for me, and it was never just for me, it was for others, because if it had not been for others, I wouldn't be here. Ultimately, Ralph hopes her journey inspires others not to give up and instead realize that if you don't make it at 20 or 30, so what? Hold on to your dreams, because you can make it at 40 or 50, and it ain't over when you're 60. The best is yet to come. This article was titled, Cheryl Lee Ralph is reaching her biggest career milestone in her 60s. Now she's telling fans, don't give up. written by Hanaya Philogene, The Griot, January 8, 2025. The next article is titled, This Season, It's About Staying Happy and Healthy. Protect Yourself from Flu, COVID, and RSV, written by the News One staff, News One, December 23, 2024. It's officially flu season, bringing with it seasonal viruses as they spread through the fall and winter months. For those 65 and older, the risk of severe illness from the flu, COVID-19, and RSV is notably higher. However, with more available resources and preventive measures than ever before, we can take control and ensure that severe illnesses doesn't keep us or our loved ones from living our best lives. Women's health advocate and star of The Real Housewives of Atlanta, Cynthia Bailey, joined choreographer Shuanta Porter, S-H-U-A-N-T-A, in the dance studio to share an important message with the class. Illness can affect your entire life, and that is why it is so important for all of us to prioritize feeling good from the inside out, said Bailey. Remember to keep living your best life. Porter is famous for her line dance routines, which inspire her students, social media followers, and everyone in between to get active. Bailey surprised Porter's line dance class with a special guest appearance, falling right into rhythm as they stepped in perfect sync. As a health advocate and co-host of the annual Black Health Matters 2024 Health Summit and Expo, Bailey is passionate about inspiring healthy lifestyles. An important step to staying healthy this season is getting vaccinated against flu, COVID-19, and RSV. Adults ages 65 and older were 10 times more likely to be hospitalized for either flu, COVID-19, or RSV than those under 50. As we age, the risk of severe illnesses from viruses like flu, COVID-19, and RSV increases. These illnesses can cause serious health complications among older adults, making it crucial to stay up to date with this season's vaccines. Staying protected can help prevent severe illness and empower us to live life to the fullest. Last season, vaccines helped prevent nearly 9 million flu cases and cut flu and COVID-19 hospitalizations in half across all ages. Vaccines are important tools that help us stay healthy and active so that we can continue to show up for the moments that matter. Take charge this season and lower your risk of severe illness by getting vaccinated for flu, COVID-19, and RSV. This article was titled, This Season, It's About Staying Happy and Healthy. Protect Yourself from Flu, COVID, and RSV. Written by the News One staff, News One, December 23rd, 2024. The next article is from Ebony and is titled, We Are Here to Stay, The Rise of Black Quarterbacks in the NFL. Written by Kristen Morgan, January 10th, 2025. As the NFL Wild Card Weekend kicks off the chase for the Vince Lombardi Trophy, it's the perfect time to highlight the significance of the NFL's 105th season, especially the significance of the black quarterback. When you think of legendary quarterbacks, names like Randall Cunningham, Michael Vick, Warren Moon, Steve McNair, and Doug Williams come to mind. These men didn't just play the game, they redefined it. Doug Williams not only led Washington, formerly known as Redskins, to a Super Bowl victory in 1988, but also snagged the MVP honors, making history as the first black quarterback to do so. These pioneers laid the groundwork for the dynamic stars we see today, transforming what was once considered an anomaly into the new norm. Back in the day, a black quarterback was seen as a rarity, a black horse in a predominantly white field. The idea of a quarterback who could both launch a 60-yard pass and sprint like an Olympic athlete was almost mythical. But these trailblazers shattered stereotypes and opened doors, proving that talent knows no color. Fast forward to 2025, and the NFL landscape has changed dramatically. Out of 32 teams, 15 boast starting African-American quarterbacks, with 7 leading their teams into the playoffs. These athletes are not just participants, they're contenders, each with a unique style of play and story. C.J. Stroud of the Houston Texans, the 2023 NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year, proved he was more than ready for the big stage. Stroud's precision, passing, and quick decision-making have been crucial to the Texans' success this season. Los Angeles Chargers versus Houston. Lamar Jackson, the 2-time league MVP, continues to dazzle fans with his electrifying performances for the Baltimore Ravens. Jackson's dual threat capability keeps defenses on their toes, making him one of the most exciting players to watch. Veteran Russell Wilson is having a resurgent season with the Pittsburgh Steelers. With 1 Super Bowl under his belt, Wilson is hungry for another, bringing experience and leadership to his team. Jordan Love, a rising star for the Green Bay Packers. His journey from backup to starting quarterback has been nothing short of inspiring. Love's ability to read defenses and make clutch plays has made him a fan favorite and a player to watch in the playoffs. Jalen Hurts of the Philadelphia Eagles is known for his stoic demeanor and playmaking abilities. Hurts has the knack for staying calm under pressure, leading his team with a quiet confidence that speaks volumes. In Washington, rookie sensation Jaden Daniels is making waves. A potential rookie of the year, Daniels has shown poise beyond his years, quickly becoming a key player for the Commanders. Patrick Mahomes, with 3 Super Bowl rings already, the Kansas City Chiefs quarterback is a household name. Mahomes' combination of arm strength, agility, and football IQ makes him a formidable opponent on any given Sunday. As these quarterbacks gear up for the 2025 Super Bowl in New Orleans, they carry the legacy of those who came before them. They are not just athletes, they are symbols of progress and possibility. For black fans everywhere, these quarterbacks represent a new era in the NFL, one where talent, skill, and determination are the only things that matter. So as you watch the playoffs unfold, remember the trailblazers who made it all possible, and celebrate the new generation of black quarterbacks who are taking the league by storm. This article was titled, "We're Here to Stay: The Rise of Black Quarterbacks in the NFL," written by Kirsten Morgan, Ebony, January 10th, 2025. Next, an article from Anscape titled, "Patrick Mahomes, Super Bowl-bound Kansas City Chiefs Continue to Break New Ground," written by Jason Reed, R-E-I-D, January 27th, 2025, Kansas City, Missouri. Before delving into Kansas City Chiefs' 32-29 victory Sunday night over the Buffalo Bills in the AFC Championship game, there's a matter that must be addressed. For the Chiefs and superstar quarterback Patrick Mahomes, the job is not finished. Defeating the Bills in the postseason, something the Chiefs are quite accustomed to doing in the Mahomes era, was only a means to an end. As much delight as they took in ending the Bills' season yet again at the GEHA field at Arrowhead Stadium, the Chiefs are focused on breaking new ground in the history of America's national pastime. The 2-time defending Super Bowl champs now head to Super Bowl LIX in New Orleans In an effort to win 3 straight Super Bowls, which would be an unprecedented accomplishment, on February 9th at the Caesars Superdome, the AFC champion Chiefs will face the NFC champion Philadelphia Eagles, whom they defeated in Super Bowl 57 at Glendale, Arizona, to begin their current championship run. That Super Bowl was first featuring 2 black starting quarterbacks, now Mahomes and Philadelphia's Jalen Hurts, who played well in leading his team to a 55-23 blowout victory over the Washington Commanders in Sunday's NFC Championship game, will run it back. After tying for the NFL's best record during the regular season, winning their 8th straight AFC West division title, securing home field advantage throughout the AFC playoffs, and eliminating the Houston Texans in the divisional round, the Chiefs ruined yet another season for the Bills and their long-suffering fans. On social media, on sports talk radio, and wherever the table destroying Bills Mafia gathers, it believes this was finally Buffalo's year. But despite being reminded constantly, the Bills and their fans still don't seem to understand that they're not on the Chiefs' level. Perhaps it will finally sink in after their 4th consecutive gut-wrenching playoff loss to the NFL's best team. Again, Buffalo is headed back to Western New York to lament about what could have been. The Chiefs are headed back to the Super Bowl, or to put it another way, a typical NFL season for each team. "That's a great football team we played," Mahomes said of the Bills. "But at the end of the day, I'm trusting my teammates versus anybody. The trust is born of results." The Chiefs will become the first team to play in 5 Super Bowls in a span of 6 seasons. Additionally, they've won 9 consecutive playoff games. If the Chiefs defeat the Eagles in the Super Bowl, they'll tie the New England Patriots 2001 to 2005 for the most consecutive postseason victories with 10. To understand the Chiefs' success, one needs to start with the person who plays the most important position in sports for them. Mahomes is fabulous during the regular season. His 2 AP League MVP awards and his AP Offensive Player of the Year award attest to his status within the league. In the playoffs, however, Mahomes takes things to a higher level. Both with his passing arm and feet, Mahomes was in good form again Sunday. He completed 18 of 26 passes for 245 yards and 1 touchdown, an 11-yarder to rookie wide receiver Xavier Worthy in the second quarter. More on him in a bit. As a runner, Mahomes had 43 rushing yards and 2 touchdowns. He had an outstanding passer rating of 111.9 and a sparkling total QBR of 87.1. "Mahomes was phenomenal," said Chiefs chairman and CEO Clark Hunt. "Patrick Mahomes is at his best when the games are on the line. He and his teammates always find a way to get it done." With the victory, Mahomes improved to 17-3 in the playoffs. He is now alone in second place on the NFL's all-time playoff wins list, behind Tom Brady, who has 35. Mahomes is 29 years old. Although the Chiefs thrived during the regular season, NFL observers lauded other quarterbacks more. As the Chiefs struggled with major injuries and problems at left tackle, Mahomes wasn't as productive statistically as Baltimore Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson and Bills signal caller Josh Allen, who were considered the leading contenders for this season's AP League MVP award. The regular season is irrelevant now. For the 4th consecutive time in the postseason, Allen came up short against Mahomes. What's especially infuriating for the Bills and their fans is that Allen played well against the Chiefs, and he did again Sunday. Allen completed 22 of 34 passes for 237 passing yards and 2 touchdowns. I have so much respect for Josh, Mahomes said. He is a true competitor, a true warrior, and a great football player. These games always come down to the wire. Luckily, we were on the winning side. Of course, Mahomes didn't do it alone. The irony of the Chiefs' success at the expense of the Bills is that the Chiefs traded with the Bills to move up in the 2017 NFL draft to pick Mahomes. Talk about a move that changed the course of NFL history. During the 2024 draft, the Bills traded with the Chiefs again, enabling the Chiefs to select Worthy, who set an all-time NFL scouting combine record of 4.21 seconds in the 40-yard dash. On Sunday, Worthy led the Chiefs with 6 receptions for 85 yards and the touchdown reception. Regardless of the outcome of the Super Bowl, the Chiefs are assured the best finish of a team that has won consecutive Super Bowls. In the Super Bowl era, which began in 1967, 9 teams have won consecutive titles. The Pittsburgh Steelers completed the feat twice. The Chiefs are the first such team to return to the Super Bowl a third consecutive season. In 1976, Pittsburgh Steelers, 1990 San Francisco 49ers, and 1994 Dallas Cowboys returned to their conference championship games the season after becoming back-to-back champions. The Chiefs, as they have done repeatedly during the Mahomes era, have broken new ground. They've gone where no other team has gone. And make no mistake, the NFL's best player has his sights set on clearing the biggest hurdle of all. This article was titled, Patrick Mahomes, Super Bowl-bound Kansas City Chiefs Continue to Break New Ground, written by Jason Reed and Scape, January 27th, 2025. That's all the time we have for the African American Hour. My name is Rosemary Onkwe. Thanks for joining me.